Blog Talk Radio.
T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5. All three engines up and burning. 2, 1, 0, and liftoff.
Coach on Fire Radio.
I am the
Welcome to this, the second episode of the Confidence Alchemist Radio Show here on the Coach on Fire Radio Network. My name's Keith Blakemore-Noble. I am the Confidence Alchemist, and I want to welcome you to the show. Thank you so much for joining me. If you were listening to the last show, then thank you very much for coming back. If you weren't listening to the last show, then thank you for joining me in this one. It's always great to have listeners, old and new, returning to us. So today's episode, I am thrilled to be joined by a gentleman called Kirk Pickstone. Now, Kirk he describes himself as the international dyslexic superhero. We're going to find out a little bit more about what that's all about. But Kirk is he's an entrepreneur. He has a successful business. He also has dyslexia, so he knows what it's like with dyslexia. He knows the challenges, and he knows the advantages as well. Oh, yes, there are advantages. We're going to look into all of that. So I'm going to introduce Kirk in a moment. Kirk is on the line, ready and waiting. Just a reminder that this is a live show, so we'd love to have your input if you want to take part, if you want to ask some questions, share some comments, share observations, whatever. A couple of ways you can take part. If you are in America, then you can call us on our guest call-in line, which is 646-716-7979. That number, again, is 646-716-7979. If you're not in America, don't call that number because it is an international number. It will cost you a fortune. If you're outside of America, in which case, if you want to take part, send us some messages, have comments to go on air. Best way to do that is go to the Confidence Alchemist Facebook page, facebook.com/theconfidencealchemist. Like the page while you're there and pop in a message, send a message on there. That'll come up and I will get it live during the show. So either dial in if you're in America, that number again, 646-716-7979, or go along to the Confidence Alchemist Facebook page, like the page while you're there and send a message, and that's how you can take part in the show. So without any further ado, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, please join me in welcoming the international dyslexic superhero, Mr. Kirk Pickstone. Hello, Kirk.
Good evening. That was great. A great introduction, and good afternoon to those in the States, because obviously there's a bit of a time shift, isn't there?
Yes, time travel is. Who would have known that time travel would get involved in all of this? It's awfully confusing at times, I have to say. So how's you?
Yeah, I'm really good, Keith. There's lots going on at the moment, and obviously, you know, that's why I'm on, because you know a lot about my story, and obviously your listeners don't, and I suppose that's what tonight's about. So yeah, in the last few months, things have really taken off, and like some of the other things I've been working on, I've really started to take momentum. So yeah, I'm quite pleased where I am at the minute.
Cool. So first thing I've got to ask, international dyslexic superhero, what's that all about?
Well, the story behind that is everyone has a title, don't they? Like, gives themselves a title, like, I don't know, the world's best this or the number one, whatever. Yeah, you know what I mean? Like speakers, mm-hmm. or whatever the case may be. And I'm dyslexic and I get things wrong. And a friend of mine, I do a lot of networking, and I was doing some speaking. I do speaking at events, and I went to an event one night, and he's a good friend of mine, and he introduced me as the illiterate fool. Now, I laughed because to me that doesn't bother me. You know what I mean? It's just water off a duck's back. So then I got thinking about it, and I thought, well, actually, that's very negative. I'm trying to change the perceptions of dyslexia in the UK. Let's start with the UK. And so by him calling me illiterate fool, which I took in jest, I thought, well, when someone else hears that, they're going to see that in a negative context. Yeah. So they get straight away, it's a literate fool. They're going to see me as a bit of a joke. And I thought, well, that's not very good for what I'm trying to do. So I thought, well, I need to come up with, I need to get rid of that. I need to get it, because everyone started to refer to me as that. And I thought, I've got to get rid of this. I've got to stop it. It's not good. You know what I mean? This is not good. So I thought, what can I call myself? I didn't want to call myself the number one this or the second of this or the best at this. And I'm a bit, you know what I'm like, Keith. I'm a bit wacky. I'm about fun. The profile photo will see. And I like enjoying life. So I thought, well, I need to come up with a fun name that says something about what I'm trying to do in a fun way where people will go, oh, why have you called yourself that? So we get into a bit of a discussion, a bit of a debate. So I do a radio show and a podcast, as you know, and that goes out to loads of countries. I've spoke in Scotland. I've been interviewed in Scotland. I've done some stuff in Wales. So I just thought, well, why not international? Rather than UK, why not international? So that's how it came about, the International Dyslexic Superhero, because I'm a superhero. I want to be a superhero to dyslexics. I want them to look up to what I'm doing, and I want them to aspire to becoming an entrepreneur, being happy and being a dyslexic, not seeing it as a negative thing, seeing it as a positive, embracing it and running with it. So that's the reason for it. So, and then if I go and speak in schools and I call myself the International Dyslexic Superhero, it sort of breaks the ice a bit. Do you know what I mean? And they get a bit of a chuckle. Mm. So that's, I know it's a bit of a long-winded thing, but that's the rationale behind the name.
Cool, nice. And it's certainly a great name, and it, you're absolutely right. Everybody calls themselves something. Heck, I call myself the Confidence Alchemist. So I totally get where you're coming from. I love that name, the International Dyslexic Superhero. Do you wear a cape or do you have your underwear on outside your trousers?
No, well, if anyone goes and looks at my profile picture on me, I'll talk about later on Facebook, they'll see that I wear novelty T-shirts, and the one that I'm most famous for is, it's a shirt and tie T-shirt. It's a rugby shirt, but it's a shirt and tie. It's got a pocket watch. It's got a little handkerchief in the top corner. And that's what I wear when I go networking. So, yeah, that's what. But what I'm thinking of doing, I'm going to have some new ones made. And I went to a school Monday this week to do some business with year eight. So don't know how old they are. I can't never work it out now. But anyway, year eight. I got talking to them. One of these girls started writing on her hand. I thought, well, I'm really interesting to her. She's doodling on her hand. Thanks very much. Thanks for listening to me. Great. And what I didn't know, she was doing me a logo.
Oh, nice.
So she drew a logo like Superman with a D in it. She said, I think you should have a shirt with this underneath. And then when you come out and talk, you should just rip it off. So I'm thinking about some shirts made with this, with a dyslexic symbol on and with it sort of ripping open. So that might come soon.
Neat. Now, we've mentioned the word dyslexic and dyslexia a few times, and mm-hmm. I know a lot of people have got preconceptions about what dyslexia is, what it isn't, what it means about the person. But can you tell us, what is dyslexia, and what does it actually mean, and what does it mean for a person who has dyslexia?
Well, the thing is with dyslexia, it affects about 10 to 15% of the population. A lot of people think it only affects people that speak English, and it doesn't affect other languages. Now, the thing with dyslexia, the language bit, reading and writing, is the symptom. That is not dyslexia. So people think that dyslexics can't read and write, so they associate it being not intelligent, and dyslexics associate themselves as not being intelligent because of that. But the actual thing is, it's not, that's like I said, it's a symptom. The actual thing about dyslexia, it's about, if you think about, I try to explain it, if you get a Mac and a PC next to each other, they will fundamentally do the same thing. You could do Excel spreadsheets, you can do amazing, you know, radio shows like you're doing now, Keith. you can do all that sort of, whatever you do, you can do on both machines. But the way where they store, retrieve, and process information is fundamentally different. And if you get try and take a program from a Mac and put it in a PC, then the Mac can't understand it, doesn't get it, doesn't read it, can't read it, and vice versa. So what we have to do is put bridges across the two things for those pieces of equipment to talk to each other. So there's programs that work so they can talk. Now, what happens in real life with a dyslexic, when they're talking their way of the world and they talk to a non-dyslexic, half the time they the non-dyslexic don't understand what I'm talking about because they can't compute what they're going, what they're, because they're absorbing the world in a different way. Does that make sense?
It does, yeah. And I love the computer analogy there. That's a great way explaining
so
it.
I mean, I did a dissertation on it, Are Dyslexics Predisposed Entrepreneurs? So I have researched the brain, and it just bores me to go through it. And I'm not going to go with parts of the brain. So language, as an example, is made up of several elements. You visualize something. So say, I always use the example of a pen. You'd see an image of a pen, yeah? That's stored in your brain. Then you know what the word pen is, how you say pen, how your mouth moves to say pen. And then your body knows how to write, your hand to move to write pen. And your brain also knows P-E-N is pen. Yeah, I think it is.
Yeah.
And they're stored in the brain and they come together in a split second in the non-dyslexic mind. It's very good at having all this, you know, this information, bringing it together. But it's not, and I'll give you another analogy of the way in a second after I've explained this. But in the dyslexic mind, it doesn't work like that. It's all jumbled up. And language, you know, that's why it's not very, that's why language gets confused because... And I'll give you the example, or the way I explain it is, if you think of the non-dyslexic mind as like much like a library, so you've got books and information stored in a library, which is nice and neat, it's very logical, it's very ordered. So when the non-dyslexic goes in to retrieve the word pen, they'll just quickly go into that part of the library, pick it out, use the information, put it back again. Yeah, perfect. Absolutely wonderful. Dead easy for that. But it's very logical, and it's quite rigid, actually, because your brain at about 14, 15, 16 starts severing parts of it that it doesn't need the, and then firms up other links in your brain, yeah, so that you can, you know, it makes it more efficient. That's why teenagers are like they are. It's, but anyway. Now, in the dyslexic mind, it's not like that. I like to describe it as a cylinder of information. So everything's just sloshing around. And things are grouped together like leaves and feathers are grouped together and pens and pencils are grouped together. And dyslexics, they remember the word, the image of the word, not they don't read the word. And this is where the confusion comes, where they start trying to write things because they're almost learning language on a daily basis, if you like. So when they work, after a period of time, words that they're using on a frequent basis, then you can start to, they'll come out because they're remembering the word. Does that, am I making sense? That makes sense.
Yeah, I get that. That is making a lot of sense, yeah.
So what I like to say is there's advantages and disadvantages of both the systems. The disadvantage for the dyslexic is we don't fit in to the system of education and the corporate world because it's developed over a period of time to accommodate the masses, the 85%. So there's 15% outside it because they don't work the same way. And that this is part of the issue that I get. It's classed as a disability. It's classed as a learning difficulty. I hate both of them because they're negative, totally negative. So if you're a dyslexic and someone says, oh, you've got a learning difficulty, or you've got a learning difficulty or are disabled, that's very, very negative to that individual. And the rest of the world think the same way. They all think that dyslexics have a disability or are disabled. They're not as clever as anyone else because of what they do. Now, the disadvantage of the non-dyslexic mind is this great system where you're in this library and you're looking for some information. And I like to use the analogy with the phones. So Nokia, very traditional company, very linear in thinking, stuck in the library. So what do we do to make a phone? Tell you what, we'll make it more robust and we'll make it so that the battery lasts for 6 months without even being charged up because, you know, I know it's exaggerating. So that's what they focus on, is just improving what they already had. Because in their library of information, if they're in, say, their phone library section, science is on the other side of the library and they're not going to be bothered to walk two or three aisles or flights of stairs to get to the other part of the library. So the non-dyslexic is stuck in this, what they know, what they've learned. Now the dyslexic, great example, Steve Jobs, because Steve Jobs was dyslexic, bless him, yeah, he sat there and he goes, puts his information, he's not stuck in this one thing, he's got all this information sloshing around, and I like to explain it as being like a Google brain. So he puts a search in for something and he gets a problem and he goes, well, actually, yeah, I've got a phone here and we've got a computer here and we've got screens and we've got... I'll tell you what we'll do, lads. We'll make a phone with no buttons on it. I was like, what? Yeah, we'll make a phone. Because I explained this to some kids the other day, and they've obviously never seen a phone with buttons. You know what I mean? They didn't live in that time.
Yeah.
You're all used to smartphone touchscreens. We never used to have them. You just used to have a little screen with the numbers on it. So he's not restricted by this constraint of this rigid system. So this fluidity in the brain allows you to make links to things that other people can't make. And going back to my computer analogy, so when someone like Steve Jobs goes, I've got this amazing idea, I'm going to make a phone with no buttons on, the non-dyslexic go, what is he talking about? That'll never work. What a stupid idea. Yeah?
Yeah.
Zara, does that... That's quite a big chunk of information. So that's how I like to describe it and how I like to explain. So, and for dyslexics, part of the dyslexic makeup is they're not very confident, which you could help them with. Obviously.
Yeah, that's why the two of us are talking about this together, because there is a very much an overlap between our respective fields.
Yeah. So they've this little brain, this little thing in the brain going, oh, you're not very clever, you're not very clever, look at what they're doing. It's like it's pushing them down all the time. And then you've got society and your education saying, well, you're not very good at that, you're not very good at that. So this is why I want to break this and stop it, because teachers don't even get it. Teachers don't even, a lot of teachers, when I've been researched, don't even believe it actually exists. And I just find that ridiculous, because it was first documented in 1896.
Wow, 1896.
A doctor discovered it in 1896 with a young boy that, they called word blindness, because he couldn't read. Yeah, because you know what? They didn't read. And then what he did, there's some other research where he had a patient where he'd had a trauma to the left hemisphere and he lost the ability that he previously had of language. And that's where I start to make the links with dyslexia and what have you. So, and then, but I can't believe it. We're at 2017 and we've still got people out there that don't believe in its existence and just treat kids and adults as being lazy, stupid. And I'll keep on going. I can talk all night and keep by the way. And then, when I go and do my research at university, I discover that in my cohorts, because I went to university at 44, you see, when I found out I was dyslexic, I went to university. Mm-hmm. And I found out of 9 people, 5 or 6 of us in the group were dyslexic. So I started looking at the numbers at the university in Coventry and went, oh, that's like, in the entrepreneurial skills, like 30, 35% of people are dyslexic. Because when you join university, you tick, are you disabled? Yes. What is it? Dyslexia. Tick. But in the general populace, it was only about 15%. So, and that's where it got me looking at the link between entrepreneurial activity and dyslexics. Why are dyslexics gravitating to this entrepreneurial school? Why are 35% of entrepreneurs dyslexic? There must be a reason. Why is this the case? And what you find is that dyslexics don't tend to fit into the corporate world, so they don't tend to get to senior levels. Only 3-4% of CEOs of large corporations are dyslexic. One or two things. We don't like structure, and the more you go up the ladder, the more structure and bureaucracy there is in organizations. And also, these great companies want to retain and promote the best people, the great leaders, the guys with good ideas. So they give these tests, and guess what? Dyslexics either can't pass the tests or don't want to take the tests because they're parents. So they don't progress. Yeah. Yet the dyslexic mind is perfect to be an entrepreneur. When I looked at this, there's several things where they're polar opposites, and the confidence and things like that. But there's a group of traits where they overlap and they both have the same sort of traits, problem solving, spatial awareness, all that sort of stuff, make great leaders and mentors. And that's why the reason why it's then gravitate to being entrepreneurs. And that's why we see the likes of Richard Branson and people like that being successful.
Got it. So as you said, there's a lot of information that you've given there, and just to, so we can kind of summarize and recap, I guess. So dyslexia, as you say, it's not it's not where am I? So dyslexia, reading and writing is what most people think of when they think of dyslexia, but that's not what dyslexia is. That's just that's more of a symptom. Whereas dyslexia itself is, would you say it's kind of the brain is sort of wired up and operates in a slightly different way, kind of like as you said, the Mac and a PC, they do the same things, but they do them in different ways. So it's kind of really, it's just the brain. Neither is right, neither is wrong. Dyslexia isn't right or wrong. Non-dyslexia isn't right or wrong. They're just different ways of accessing and processing the information.
Yeah. Because of these negative things and people misunderstanding, and that's why I am going to change the perception of dyslexia in the UK. I will. I'll start with the UK, and then my ultimate aim is to take it further. But I'm going to start with the UK. It infuriates me the whole view of it and the way people are treated and not understood. Because if you tell someone, or they tell themselves for 20, 30 years, that they're not as good as anybody else, they're not going to be as good as anyone else, are they? They're going to settle for second best when they could be people out there that are stuck in a job flipping burgers, and I've got nothing against people doing that, or filling gas, I've got nothing against that. But all I'm saying is there'll be people out there doing those types of jobs, driving buses or whatever, because they're scared of going out of it because of the way they think they are. But they could be the people that are the next Steve Jobs. They could be the people that have got the cure for cancer, because the brain is perfect to solve problems, and they won't give up once they start going at it. That's what I want to do. I want to encourage these people to be the best they can be, not set for second best, and for them to go out and try and do something for themselves.
Excellent, and I can totally get. Oh gosh. I shall start that again. I can totally get behind you on that and see exactly where you're coming from. And in a moment, we're going to take a look at, you mentioned earlier that you looked at are dyslexics predisposed to being entrepreneurs? And so we're going to take a bit of a look at that in a moment. That's the next thing we'll go on to. Just before we do, just a reminder to anyone who's just tuned in. Sorry about that. My system just there's all sorts of gremlins going on with my computer today. I don't know what. I think it's because you mentioned PC and it's a Mac and it's getting all upset. I think so. Anybody who's just tuned in, this is Keith Blakeman-Noble, the Confidence Alchemist, and today I'm speaking with the international dyslexic superhero Kirk Pickstone, who's telling us all about what dyslexia is, what it isn't, and he's going to be sharing with us in a moment why dyslexics tend to be predisposed towards being entrepreneurs. You're absolutely going to want to listen to that. If you want to join in, if you want to take part and have a conversation, if you're in the US, call us in on our guest line, which is 646-716-7979. That's 646-716-7979. I can't help thinking we need a jingle for that. Maybe next time. If you're not in the US, please don't use that number, because it will cost you an absolute fortune, as it'll be an international call. So instead, hop onto Facebook, go to The Confidence Alchemist Facebook page, like the page while you're there. Why not? It's a fantastic page. And while you're there, you can send a message to Facebook, to The Confidence Alchemist on Facebook. I will get that message and I can read it out live in the studio. Exciting. So Kirk, yes, you mentioned actually one that was a surprise to me. You mentioned that Steve Jobs was dyslexic. I didn't realize, but now you mention it, and looking at the massive there's no denying that Apple really have done things in a very different way. That was one of their slogans, wasn't it? Think different. And you can see now that you mention and draw our attention to the fact that Steve Jobs had dyslexia, you can see how that different way of processing things, different way of accessing things, the different way of blending stuff together in the brain resulted in a very different way of creating products that do things in a different way. As you say, who on earth before Steve Jobs, who would have thought of creating a phone with absolutely no buttons on it whatsoever? And yet here we are, pretty much every phone you see these days looks like a copy of the iPhone. We know that Steve Jobs was dyslexic. We know Richard Branson was dyslexic. I know for some people it can be a great comfort to know that they're not alone. So who can you give us, I don't know, maybe five other famous people, entrepreneurs, business leaders, politicians, five other successful people that people will have heard of who are dyslexic. And that's going to kind of help put this into context so people realize, oh, wow, actually, I'm not alone. Huh.
Yeah, well, so they're not all entrepreneurs, but a good one for you. Jennifer Aniston's just come out of the dyslexic closet, as I like to call it. Robbie Williams, UK singer, he's dyslexic. Jamie Oliver, people know him in the States as well, he's dyslexic. Walt Disney was dyslexic. Churchill was dyslexic. I think Einstein might have been dyslexic as well. I can't remember now off the top of my head. But yeah, there's, I'm trying to think of else. So yeah, you've got a couple of politicians in there. There's another TV chef in the UK, James Martin, who's just been doing a lot of things about being dyslexic. And these people are quite, whether you like them or not, they're all quite, you know, they're up there in their relative field. Oh, Theopithetus from the Dragon's Den. I don't know if they are, I know you have a Dragon's Den in the US, but he's one of the, he was one of the dragons in the UK. He's dyslexic as well. I'm trying to think, there's loads of them, mate. There's absolutely loads of people that you would are dyslexic. And it's just the way, people know Jamie Oliver. I mean, I've been watching Jamie Oliver's progress since the start. The Naked Chef did something totally different, radical in his approach at the time, and now a lot of people have emulated him. And then he's had his drive in the UK about sugar, and then he's took that to politicians, and then in the US he's done about the food meals and done a lot of campaigning. So these people, when they get something in their head and they see a different way of working, will really grasp it and run with it, you know. And it's almost like, no, I'm not going to give up until I've done this, because dyslexics have always had to try and cope with the world all their lives, and they find different ways of working. And I'll give you a great example, Keith. I wanted to get on radio. Yeah, I'm on radio now myself. I wanted to get on the BBC radio to send a message out. Come on, I've got to get this message out. I've got a great message. Sure, they're going to want to talk to me. Nothing. Phone calls, I've had emails, I've done all sorts. So being a dyslexic, I went, do you know what? Why do I have to be on their show? I'll do my own show. So I started my own show on a Tuesday night. It's just a social radio. I do it and turn it into a podcast. And then about six or seven shows in, I get a phone call from the BBC in Coventry. We've been listening to your podcast, and can you come in and talk to us on Saturday? I've been chasing them for months and got nothing back. They ignored me. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's what I think happens, is the because you've had to put coping strategies in, subconsciously putting them in, even if, like, I didn't know till I was 44 I was dyslexic. So all throughout my life, I've put coping strategies in to make sense of the world and get on and be like everybody else. So those coping strategies as well, a way of getting round problems, is another way. Do you know what I mean? Does that make sense? So, because you're trying to make sense of the world on a daily basis and conform to what everyone else is achieving, then it gives you another bit of skill to sort of get into another environment and go, right, how can I solve this problem? And what are these different ways of doing it?
So is that why you believe dyslexics are predisposed toward being entrepreneurs? Is it because they have that very, very different way of seeing the world? They view it from a far less, which was a rigid or even a far less conventional way, which means that they're open to a lot more alternative ways of creating success. Is that it, or is there more to it?
No, that's it. Because I mean, if you go back to the analogy of the left brain, right brain, the dyslexic are more in. I believe in my own brain. I'm quite flat across both. You know what I mean? I'm quite balanced. Mm-hmm. So I think that gives me a double advantage. But the to be an entrepreneur and to innovate, you need to be creative. So the creative dyslexics, if you viewed them from the left and right brain, got the more creative side of the brain than the logic linear side of the brain, which allows them to. If a great way to explain it, if you've got a child, you know, a toddler, they'll do all sorts of stuff. They'll practice and they'll sing and they'll draw and they'll do all the rest of it, and they'll just. They're not bothered. They'll play, you know, they'll play in an experiment and they'll work things out. And for me, that's what's happening in the dyslexic mind. It's more playful. It's more creative. It's, well, nothing stupid. Let's try what happens with that. And, you, do you know what I mean? That's what I believe is going on in the majority of dyslexics' minds.
Got it. So they're,
as you alluded to earlier, the reason that they don't do well in business in the corporate world is because it's very rigid, very structured. So that kind of hampers them in the corporate world. But when they're allowed to fully explore their non-rigid views of the world, fully explore playing around and mixing things together and seeing what comes up, that's when, well, that's what entrepreneurs do. They do things differently from everyone else, so they get different results.
And that's the same. I mean, I'll give you an example. I used to work for some really big global businesses from a supply chain. I used to do, you know, moving things about. I used to manage teams of drivers and warehouse staff or whatever it was. And I'd had a background from working in a warehouse, as an example. We used to have teams, and teams always work together. So if you look at the army, you look at football teams or cricket, whatever, teams, when they get together, when they come together as one, it's quite powerful, isn't it? You know, the sum of the whole, rather than one person,
yes,
all the teams working together. So
yes,
I've got this in my head, and I'm working with a logistics company. It was Cemex at the time, which is a global cement business from Mexico originally. But anyway, I've got these teams of drivers, and if you know anything about drivers, they're solitary people. They work on their own all day. It must be monotonous. They tend to be not very pleasant when they come back at night, generally. I know, because I've had hundreds and hundreds working for me, and I believe because they're solitary beings, they're on their own, it's not very good. People need interaction. So I went to my boss and went, right, I've got an idea. I know I've got to think of way how we can get these guys more engaged, enjoying the jobs more, reduce accidents, increase productivity. And he went, well, what are you thinking of doing? I says, well, I'm gonna make 10 teams of 10 drivers. He went, what you are? I said, I'm gonna make 10 teams of 10 drivers, and I'm gonna league table them. I'm not gonna beat up the worst performers. I'm just gonna try and get. Now, then we can isolate the Pareto principle, 80-20 rule. There'll be two teams of drivers who are causing most of the problems. Let's have a look why. Let's give them more training, development. Let's not beat them up, but let's do it from a positive. What are the good teams doing to the bad teams? He went, you're not doing that. Stupid. Never happened. Like, why would we do that with drivers? Anyway, 6 months later, that business that I was working for lost that contract, and I remained in that business. I worked for that business. So guess what I did? I made 10 teams of 10 drivers. Within 6 months, they rolled it across the UK, and all the drivers were in driver teams. League tabled them. And we just focused on the worst two teams, but not from a penalising them, from a how do we improve you? What do we need to do? We had lead drivers. And they're going, why would anyone want to be a lead driver? What are you going to pay them? Nothing. So we had drivers in charge of teams that wasn't getting any extra benefit, but they were guys that wanted to improve the operation. They were passionate, because most people go to work, they don't go to work to just clock in and clock off. Most people go to work because, and they want to contribute. So give them afford them the opportunity. So anyway, that's an example of my brain working and going, actually, this works over here. Why don't we put it over here where it's totally alien, and let's see what happens. And do you know what? If it didn't work, we'd just stop doing it. Nothing was going to happen. You know what I mean?
Well, exactly. You change things. If it doesn't have the desired effect, you don't have to keep it that way forever. Exactly.
On to something else. And that, yeah, and there's lots of people like that around the place that should be the same sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. No, I love that. I love that that example. That's, as you say, really does show the different mindset coming in, the different way of looking at these things. In a few moments, I'd like us to explore a slightly different angle with regards to dyslexia. So in a couple of moments, we're going to sort of start to look at somebody who perhaps they're at school or they've left school, but they're still having this whole oh, you're stupid, you're rubbish, blah blah blah, the sort of stuff that a lot of schools tell people, because the schools are not able to help people with dyslexia. So in a moment or two, we're going to take a look at how somebody in that situation can change things around for themselves and develop the confidence and self-belief in them. Just before we do that, I would like to ask you, Kirk, what your favorite song is. And there's a reason for this. What's your favorite song, Kirk?
My favourite song is by the Shapeshifters, and it's called "A Lowly Theme." That's, it's got a lot of meaning to me.
Lola's Theme by the Shapeshifters. Now, I have pressed a button on this computer here, and it should be playing Lola's Theme at the moment. It's doing absolutely nothing. Let's see what happens if I press it again. It's not. It's not playing it at all. I was hoping we could play Lola's Theme while we talk about it a little. Unfortunately, technology is not my friend today. Okay. Can you sing us or hum us a little bit of Lola's Theme?
I could have actually played it because I have it as my walk-on music when I go do public speaking. I've got it on my computer actually.
That's all right. Perhaps when we do the replay of this, we might be able to fix that and get it playing in the background. But either way, tell me. So what you said, there's a lot of meaning to it. Why is that song so important to you? What does it mean to you?
Well, some of the lyrics are, I was lost and I needed a guide. And I met my wife in Holland in around 1999. And at that time, I'd just gone through a messy divorce. I was over there working out of the way. I was very low. I was probably almost on self-destruct in a strange country. I didn't care about life really. I was just, you know. And I was a bit lost. I needed a guide, and she came along, and that's what the song's about. Turned my life around. So, yeah.
Wow. I can certainly see why that's such a powerful song.
Get it played. But yeah,
I wish I could. Oh, technology. You wouldn't believe I used to work in IT, would you? I can't operate a computer.
It doesn't matter if you're in IT, does it? If the computer's about to work, it would want to work. So it's... Yeah, but that's the reason behind it. And now I've started doing some more public speaking. Mm-hmm. I use it as my walk-on music, and then I refer to that in the talk that I do, which is about myself, about people, you know, expanding what they're doing, the circle of influence, and not... Anyway, I go into detail about all that, and then I talk about dyslexia. And then at one point, I do talk about that and the reason behind the walk-on music. So mm-hmm. I have actually got it here.
Sorry, I'm just thinking there's no way I can get it playing. Anyway, sorry about that, but...
I can play it because I've got my mixer plugged in.
Oh, well, if you can give us a really, really quick blast of it, let's see if this works.
Let's see if mine works.
Yeah, go for it.
I'll wait till he thinks he's on. How's that, Keith?
Nice. Yeah. That's
Keith. Hang on, let me stop it.
Yeah.
It's all right. Cool. I turned my PC down so I couldn't hear you. I could hear myself and I turned the music down. Anyway, so I'm having technical
Lola's
issues.
Theme, but, Lola's Theme, and when you're speaking, it's Kirk's Theme.
Yeah, there you go. So that's the bit that. Just that first bit, and if you listen to it, I love it. And if I'm in the car sometimes, I have that blasting. So
Nice.
Yeah.
Alrighty. So in a moment, we're going to talk about things that people with dyslexia can do to help them reestablish their confidence. And then there's a couple really quick thing we're going to talk about, because you do an interesting thing called Pounce Interviews, and you've got a great YouTube channel. So we'll talk about those in a couple of moments. Yeah. Just before we go into those three things, just a quick reminder, if you're in the US and you want to take part in the show, if you've got any comments, any observations, any questions, give us a call on our call in line, 646-716-7979. That's 646-716-7979. If you're outside of the US, the best way to get in touch is through Facebook. If you go onto Facebook, go to the Facebook page of The Confidence Alchemist, like the page while you're there, and send me a message. And I read those messages in real time as they come through on while we're on the show. So either of those ways, great ways to get in touch. If you've got any questions for Kirk, pop them in and we'll see what we can do. But meanwhile, so I've been speaking with Kirk Pickstone, who is the international dyslexic superhero. We've been talking about how entrepreneurs dyslexics really do seem to be predisposed towards entrepreneurialism. We explored what dyslexia is. It's pretty much, if I've got this right, Kirk, it's pretty much just the way that the brain is wired up a little differently, processes things in a slightly different way. So instead of everything being rigid and segregated and separated into its own chambers and aisles and rows, the dyslexic brain is better able to make connections between lots of seemingly random things and create a beautiful order out of what might seem chaos to others. And it's that sort of flow and level of flexibility which really gives people with dyslexia quite an advantage, especially in the creative side and in entrepreneurial side of things. We had a look at so many famous people out there, successful people out there who have dyslexia: Steve Jobs, Richard Branson, James Martin, Jamie Oliver, Walt Disney. I guess I'll look at Fantasia in a completely different way now. I'm sure there must be some hints and clues in there. Churchill, a great leader of the UK in the time of our greatest trouble, dyslexic. Robbie Williams, fantastic singer. Lots of people have it. So if somebody is listening to this who they may be thinking, well, yeah, it's great for all those people, but, you know, I'm at school and teachers just don't get it. They just keep telling me I'm stupid, telling me I'm thick, I'm never going to amount to anything. Or perhaps somebody who's had that through school, they've left school and they're still thinking, no, I'm stupid, I can't get anywhere. How can they get around that? Because I'm thinking of, I'll share part of this story of somebody who's a really, really good friend of mine. They have dyslexia. When they were at school, the teachers told them, you're stupid, you're worthless, you're stupid, you're rubbish, you'll never amount to anything. When I met them, they had a job as a cashier at a checkout clerk at a supermarket. They thought that was as far as they could ever go. Yeah. I worked with them, helped them with their confidence, helped them to build confidence in themselves. They took some tentative steps into further learning, found they were actually a lot cleverer than the teachers had said. To cut a long story short, they are now a fully qualified chartered accountant. They are financial director for a UK branch of a multinational company.
Yes.
So how can somebody who's in that kind of situation, how can they go about gaining the confidence and the belief in themselves to be able to unleash their full potential?
Well, you hit the nail on the head there. I believe there's people try to teach people how to read and write, teachers and other people. There's other people try to retrain people's brains because there's systems out there to sort of rewire your brain you can do. And my whole focus is not none of those. Mine's all about confidence, which you're playing. So for me, it's about building that confidence and finding someone to give you the confidence because they've had this lifetime of self-doubt and other people telling them that their confidence levels will be on the floor, and all the time the brain's going, don't do that because you can't do it. So for me, you need to find someone who's going to build your confidence, either that's an external person like a professional like self, or go and find a mentor. It doesn't have to be someone that you actually pay or anything. It can be just someone who you know, like, and trust. That's, you know, I say not your family. Don't your family are great, but don't go to your family and go to someone else.
Yeah.
Because your family love you too much for you to make a mistake, and they will always tell, don't do that, you can't do that, and pull you back. And that's, I love my family, but they will. Yeah.
So yeah.
Find someone to build your confidence and your mentor. And what I'm trying to get through to people, and hopefully this answers your question, language, we need language. I'm not saying don't educate, but the world's moving into a different way where language is becoming less relevant in some respects because everything's more visual, video, I could probably send you a message in a minute, which would just be icons, and you'd read it. So, you know, I could spell words and you'd be wrong and you'd still know what I was saying, but we have the grammar police who kick off because it's not spelt right.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? So for me, it's realizing that it's realizing someone needs to talk to these people, and that's what I'm trying to do. I want to get it out as much as I can. You'll get to a level and you won't go past that level, or you might have incremental improvements. Stop wasting your time on it and focus on the things that you love doing and you know you're good at. So, for example, that could be someone that has a passion for... So I say for families, if you've got a kid, if your child is, say, good at drama, yeah? Don't sweat too much about the academic stuff. Yes, try and give them support and try and get to a certain level, but they might not get it. Focus their energy on the drama. Do you know what I mean? Because once they leave school and leave education, they could either get a job and become the next Jennifer Aniston, for example, or they could be on the stage, or they might not even go that. Not everyone can get to the highest levels. They might actually just set a business up, as an example, teaching other kids how to be dancers. Yeah. So my advice is get a mentor, build your confidence. You are as good as everybody else. It's just everybody else is telling you you're not, and yourself telling you. So have some self-belief, but sometimes that needs to come from someone else. Yeah. It needs to come from an external force like yourself. And then focus on the thing that you're really passionate about that makes you happy. And they'll turn that into something. I don't know what they're going to turn into, but they'll turn it into something. Things I do, I didn't know I was going to get to the point I'm now sat here talking to you, but I just knew that this is what I had to do, and I knew that's what I wanted to do. So I've just done everything I can round that path, you know, to get me here and other things I'm doing.
Got it.
Does that answer your question? I'm not saying, oh, go and read all these books or go and watch all that. The dyslexia will absorb information in a totally different way. So if I'm going to do something on, say, my motor vehicle, my bike, or I wanted to do something on my computer, or I want to learn a new sort of thing I can do, I'll go to YouTube. I'll Google it. I won't read. I'll watch someone else doing it. No?
Exactly, yeah.
So absorb it in a different way.
You're right. There's a wealth of information out there, a wealth of information. And it's interesting. And it's interesting you mentioned YouTube. We're just going to come back to that in just a second.
Oh, yeah. Cool.
Yeah. No, that's cool. It's great. The way these things always seem to just slot together.
You're good at it.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. So your advice to anybody who has dyslexia would be that You're not stupid. Clearly, you're not stupid. It's just you have a different way of representing the world, a different way of processing information. Other people may have deemed you stupid, but they don't know what they're talking about. It's easy to say that. It's hard to get that yourself. But seek out people there are people out there who can work with you to help you to start to tap in and develop your confidence in yourself. And once you've done that, go for what it is that you love and enjoy. I mean, so there's no sense in, if you do have a tremendous difficulty with reading and writing, there's no sense in attempting to read lots of books to understand it. Look up things on YouTube, listen to podcasts and audio shows, seek out a coach or mentor. But as you say, don't work with family because they love you too much to give you the opportunity to fail, and that's gonna really smother.
Because they'd love you to, your family love you that much, they don't want you to fail, so they'll look at it, and if they're not dyslexic as well, as an example, they're not going to see what you're saying, and they'll go, don't do that, love, it's not going to work, don't do that, why don't you do this? You know what I mean? On that point, I interviewed someone a few weeks ago, she's in Manhattan. She's called the Dyslexic Renegade.
Mm-hmm.
She's an author, just writing a second book. She's 11.
Nice. 11?
She's severely dyslexic. She's on a mission in the US, same as I am in the UK, and we're going to team up. And she's on a mission to change the perception in the US. And they've been battling with the schools, authorities, to get her a special education. Lovely girl. So there's just, I don't know who's made these rules up, Steve. I don't know who's made these rules. Who's said that we've got to be able to read a certain way? Who's developed? You know what I mean? Why?
Yeah, exactly.
And I don't know the answer to this, but I was interviewed a few months ago in Scotland, and I said, I'd like to go back in time to say, you know, ancient Rome or ancient Greece, and I'd like to understand the guys that were doing all the mathematics for the pyramids, all these great earthworks that they did, and they, you know, all these underground reservoirs and all that. I bet they were dyslexic. I'm convinced they would have been dyslexic. Do you know what I mean? Because that, if you look at what they're doing, I mean, that's just thousands of years ago creating. What? How did they create that? But then the way, people became the writing, because writing is only relatively new in our existence, isn't it? It's not, you know, it's not something we've always had. We're paint drawings. With emoji cons. So
pretty much, we've gone back to hieroglyphics,
Yeah, exactly. So hang on, and I'm telling you now, Keith, the people that were going to be more successful, the people that can help the UK in the future after post-Brexit, the people that are going to help America to become great, it's not Trump, it's the dyslexics. They're the ones that are going to come up with the innovations. They're the going to come up with the solutions to problems we're all getting, because as we go through, there's going to be lots of different problems coming our way, and the dyslexic people and the autistic spectrum and people like that are going to come up with the solutions that the rest of the population will need.
Absolutely. You know, something just sprung up to me there. We so often hear people talking about how we should think outside the box, the need to think outside the box, successful business, think outside the box. That's exactly what dyslexics do. That's exactly what people on the autism spectrum do. They think outside the box, and then they get everybody trying to hammer them back in the box again. What's going on here?
Get back in it. And if you go to NASA, and the majority of the people in NASA on the team there are autistic.
Think outside the box. No, not that much outside.
It doesn't make sense, does it?
It's ridiculous.
And I know you want to ask me a couple more questions and time's clicking on, but I give this example, Keith, and for people out there, this is how insane this thing is, right? So we've got little Johnny in the music class, right? And he's playing his piano. And he's terrible. Yeah, he's getting all the notes wrong. Little Daisy gets on. She's amazing. We don't turn round to little Johnny, and little Johnny's parents are saying, I'm sorry to tell you, but he's got a music deficiency. He's got a disability in music. I don't know what we're going to do. And we'll try and force him to become better at music. Then we don't go onto the playing field and look at a guy that can't run 100 metres as fast as the guy next to him and say, well, he's got a bit of an ability, he's lacking ability in athletics. What can we do to improve him? We don't do that. So why do we do the language? Yeah. Why do we?
Very good point. Very good point. Yeah.
It infuriates me how we, anyway, I'm very passionate about this, Keith,
it's good to be passionate about it. We need people who are passionate about things which are going to make the world a much better place for all of us. Because I know you're on a mission to educate and change the world view around dyslexia. You talk about the UK view. We both know you are destined for the world stage. You are the international dyslexic hero. You're not going to be just the UK. You're on a mission to change the world's perception around dyslexia. That's what we need, both for people with dyslexia so they can realize, there's not something wrong with me, and the rest of us non-dyslexic people, we need the creative thinking, the out-of-the-box thinking, which dyslexics bring, because that's only one way to solve the problems we've got.
And we need both sides of the coin. Structure. We need the logical thingers. We do need that. I'm not saying we don't, but what I'm saying is, don't look at this other group of people and say, they're not as good as us. Because that's ultimately what is happening. And this is a bizarre statement, but it's almost like X-Men. You're looking at these people, the autistic, everyone that's on the spectrums, as being these bloody mutants that don't fit in. Do you know what I mean? And they've got these amazing abilities that you can tap into, but you don't want to tap into because you're scared of them, because you don't understand them. And it's through mankind, it's always been the same. And what I've said before is, I want to be known when it's time for me to depart this mortal coil, to be known that the voice of the dyslexics and have changed the perception. Mm. And that's what it's all about, Keith.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And you mentioning that has sparked off something in the back of my mind. I want to have a chat with you after this show. I think there's something that we can do that will pool our resources and help on that. So, yeah. If anybody else wants to get in touch, what's the best way for them to get in touch with you, Kirk, and to find out more?
I've got my website, which is Dougie Stone. I go under the name of Dougie Stone, DUGGYSTONE.com. There's links to me podcasts and stuff on there, and a bit about me, some of my public speaking. And I'm not going to talk about YouTube. I took my YouTube channel off, but I'm going to put it back onto my website for my links for some of the stuff I'm doing, which you know about. So my
pamphlet. Yeah. Okay, so yeah, we've got to wrap this up in a couple of minutes. It's always the way it goes, and when we get interesting guests, it's time flies. So. 60 seconds. You mentioned YouTube and you do the fantastic thing called Pounce Interview. 60 seconds. What's that all about and where can people see them?
Yeah, they're on YouTube on my Dougie Stone channel. I started them off to raise the awareness of people coming to my networking group so a wider audience can see it. They didn't know I was going to do it. I just came up to them, put the phone in front of them and started recording them Facebook Live because I wanted them to get confident about, because that's what I do, get confident about talking live on Facebook. So I call them Pounce Interviews. And they've grown and grown to be, everyone knows about them in the UK from 4 Networking, which I'm in. But last week I was at a business growth show. And as a result of those panel interviews and doing what I'm doing, and everything I'm doing is to raise my profile, Keith. Everything is about raising my profile. I ended up interviewing a cabinet minister, the chief secretary to the treasurer, the ex-CEO of John Lewis, who's running for mayor of Birmingham, and a reality TV person that was on The Apprentice this year. I would never have got to them if I hadn't had this daft dyslexic idea of walking up to people and shoving a camera in front of them. I'm going to take it a step further now. We're actually going to do it at big events, hopefully with a proper TV crew, but beam it live to Facebook. Anyway, that's a Pounce Interview.
Fantastic. And you're right. I can see that, or I do strongly suspect your dyslexia, which enabled you to come up with this ridiculously crazy idea, which sounds daft, but my word, it works. It really does work. We've hit the buffers now, so we can't talk more about this as much as I'd like to. Perhaps we will do again at some other point. But they can find your YouTube, youtube.com/Dougie Stone, DUGGYSTONE. To find out a lot more about Kirk, the fantastic work he does, go to visit his website, DougieStone.com. That's DUGGYSTONE.com. And you're going to put a link back to your YouTube on there as well, so they can find all that. You've got resources on there. Check out the website, check out his YouTube, subscribe to his YouTube as well. That will be absolutely fantastic. Kirk, it's been an absolute pleasure having you here. Thank you so much. Have you got any last words for our wonderful listeners?
Yeah, if there's any people out there they've just discovered their child is dyslexic and they think the world's ended, get them to focus on what they're passionate about, because you might be encouraging the next Steve Jobs. Thank you.
I can't think of any better words to sum it up than that. Thank you so much, Kirk. Once again, if anyone wants to get in touch with Kirk, dougstone.com, DUGGYSTONE.com. That's it for this time. Come back in 2 weeks' time. I have got a fantastic show lined up for you in the next one. I'm running out of time. I can't tell you any more about it. But meantime, keep in touch. And don't forget to check out theconfidencealchemist.com/5-secrets. Where you'll find the 5 hidden secrets to confidence. Until next time, dear listener, thank you so much. Take care and look after yourself. Bye for now.
I can do anything. I can reach any goal today. I can do what I want. I can be what I want to be.
Radio.